The Wooten Report Live presents Nothing But Net, a look at Connecticut high school basketball with Dave Rudin on WICC 695.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Nothing But Net. I'm Dave Rudin, and we're brought to you, as always, by Duchess Restaurants. Duchess Restaurants, fresh food, served fast. I said last Sunday that the landscape was going to change a lot in the FCAC by today, and that certainly was the case. And there's so many things to talk about. Obviously, the biggest news was Staples' 18-point win over Trumbull on Wednesday night in a battle of 15-0 teams. And if you tuned in today, you're not going to really hear any talk about that. We did a special Rudin Report podcast that we taped on Thursday morning, and you can find that on the Rudin Report or all your podcast platforms. But besides that, then Trumbull had to go to Ridgefield on Friday night, and they came away with their second loss, a four-point loss to the Tigers. And Ridgefield played without their star, Jade Genova. And joining us in a little bit, Andrew McClellan, the Ridgefield coach, is going to come on and talk about that game and a few other things. But if you look at Friday night, you have St. Joseph beat New Canaan in overtime on a buzzer beater. Fairfield Ward beat Stanford. Ridgefield beat Trumbull, as we mentioned. West Till lost to Bridgeport Central. And Brian McMahon defeated Wilton. And what's the one common theme there? The team with the inferior record won the game. And then the game that probably would have had the biggest point spread if there were point spreads in high school sports, Fairfield Ludlow against Darien. Ludlow only came away with a 5-point win. So it was an absolute crazy Friday night. It probably epitomized the parity in the league below Staples. And joining me right now, as always, to talk about it, Mike Walsh. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Dave. And like you say, it was a crazy Friday night. And, when you look at it, the teams that you expected to win didn't win. But I don't know if you say any team is expected to win other than maybe Staples. It's going to be an interesting next week and a half, the next three games for each of the teams, to see where these teams are going to end up and if, in fact, they make the playoffs. And all those games that you mentioned, they were all close. And the one probably, and I spoke to John this morning, John Daly at Ludlow. He said Darien just shot the lights out and, his team didn't play with maybe a sense of urgency. And, that happens during the season. But, anything can happen in the FCAC, as evidenced by Friday night.
Yeah, I don't think if you look at it that any of the scores were a surprise. Do you? Maybe the fact I said wow because New Canaan lost at the buzzer to St. Joseph, so I sort of said a wow just because of that. But are any of those scores as big a head scratcher as say Wilton the week before going up to Ridgefield injured and winning by 20?
No, that to me still is the game that I still can't figure out. And, because then, Wilton came back and lost to West Hill the next game in a close game. And again, they lost to McMahon. So they had a great win at Ridgefield, but then they had two losses against teams they had to really beat to make the playoffs. I mean, their playoff hopes are hanging by a thread right now. The other amazing game to me was Ward and Stanford. Ward was down 38-23 at halftime and came all the way back to tie it at the end of three. So they were outscored Stanford 24-9 in the third quarter, which to me is amazing. And they ended up pulling away and winning in the fourth quarter. And that, helped Ward as far as playoffs. It's going to hurt Stanford a little bit as far as seeding. I think they should still make the playoffs unless they play like they did in that third quarter. But, you know, this is the FCX, and crazy things have been happening. And there are probably more in the next three games as we end the season.
Yeah, I want to ask you a little bit more about Stanford's standpoint, and we'll do that a little later. Let's talk, just because Drew's coming on in a little bit, let's lead off here with Ridgefield. And I told you I came away from that from the game the other night after watching the Tigers play without Jay Genova. One of the things is just the Tigers are just fundamentally sound, and they play really smart, and they had a big height advantage, and they kicked the ball inside and took advantage of it. I think, especially when Genova comes back, assuming he's healthy, and Ridgefield is supposed to have their entire team back for the postseason, which I don't remember, maybe not at all, where they've had everybody healthy. I think they match up best against Staples. I still think, I don't know that anybody matches up well against Staples, but just because they have height and can, you know, maybe match up size-wise with some of the taller Staples players, they probably they match up better than Trumbull does.
Well, no, I agree with you on that, Dave. I think that if anyone has a chance to beat Staples, it's Ridgefield. Because Ridgefield has Foley inside, and they have other bigs inside that can contest Tobias and maybe score inside. And Genova is definitely one of the top guards in the league. And so he kind of matches up with Klatsko. And, you know, the key to that game is going to be, I think, Ridgefield's defense. It hasn't been as great this year as it's been in the past. But, you know, I said that last week, and then they went out and held Greenwich to 37 points, and they contained as much as they could Sean Wilson and Trumbull. So, I mean, and like you say, they're going to get everybody back. And I think that Andrew, and he can tell us a little bit about it, developing the defense is going to be key. If he can, you know, handle it defensively, Staples, I think they have a real good chance to beat them. Again, I'm not saying they're the only team that can beat them, but they're the one that has the player personnel that will give them the best chance to do it.
You know, Jacob Hlanka has been really coming on strong. He's an inside presence. He led Ridgefield with 20 points. And Foley, as you said, he had a big game before Friday night and maybe even now. Have you ever heard the name Jack Pollock?
No, I can't say I have.
Well, I do know him now. He's one of those players that you know, Ridgefield, I guess they got the assembly line up there, as we always say. And he's playing guys that never, well, probably would not have seen the court if it wasn't for injuries. And he brought the sophomore in, and he finished with 10 points and had a couple of nice passes and beat the third quarter buzzer. I haven't seen this too much. Took a corner three-point shot and banked it in.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he had a little prayer on that one. Who knows? But I'm looking at their roster now, and he's a sophomore, as you said.
He's a sophomore. I'm sorry, he's a junior. He's a junior.
Okay. All right. Yeah, and as I say, I didn't have him circled as a contributor, but...
No. Sophomore. I was right. I'm sorry. I just looked it up.
Well, to be honest with you, he's not on the roster, this original roster that was in. So you're right. They bring him up and he contributes. And that's the great thing that Andrew does. He's able to blend his talent, teach his talent, and, you know, make them better.
And again, it's just bringing these different guys in. And what's going to happen now is you're going to have everybody healthy for the postseason, and you're going to have these other guys who got confidence from getting minutes that they wouldn't have gotten. And it's just going to make them, again, I think they match up best against Staples. I don't think anybody matches up well against Staples. After seeing them against Trumbull, I said this, and other coaches didn't disagree. I think I said it on the podcast the other day. For Staples to lose a game in the FCAC, number one component, they're going to have to play poorly. And the one game they played poorly was the Fairfield-Ludlow game, and the Falcons had a chance to win, had a game-winning shot at the end. I don't see any way Staples plays well and another team keeps up with them if they are.
Well, I think that the key is when you go through a 20-game season and, you know, I think 15 in the FCAC, you're going to have some nights where you're going to be off. And I think that happened in the Ludlow game. And to Ludlow's credit, they did a great job defensively on them. And Staples was not hitting their outside shots, but they went inside late and, you know, were able to pull away with the victory. I think the playoffs is a whole different game, though. You know, the pressure's on. It's one and done if you don't win. And, you know, so sometimes that can help a team, and sometimes that can cause a team to lose.
Okay, well, why don't we take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk a little bit more Ridgefield basketball, talk a little Trumbull basketball, and bounce around the league. You're listening to Nothing But Net on WICC.
A look at Connecticut high school basketball. Nothing But Net on WICC 600 and 95.9. The voice of Connecticut with your host, Dave Rudin.
Okay, we're back and we're talking Ridgefield basketball. The Tigers, the other big thing that came out of that game, they're now tied for second place, and they're tied with Trumbull, so they have the tiebreaker right now. If they end up tied with the Eagles, they're going to be the second seed. So it's going to be an interesting race. They've got three games left. They're going to be on the road for all three. They got Darien on Tuesday night. Maybe I shouldn't say this after a Ludlow game, but that should be a W. And then they play New Canaan, a team they're battling for top two seed, top three seed in the playoffs. And then they go to Staples. And I don't know if it's a good thing to play Staples last game in the regular season before the playoffs, or if you'd rather play them earlier in the year. But we're going to find out right now, because joining us is Tigers coach Andrew McClellan. Drew, how you doing?
Hey guys, how you doing?
Nah, thanks for coming on. And Mike, we'll get this after, but I ended up going out with a friend after the game Friday, and Drew and his family and some assistants came in, and he said, I know you're not going to like this, but he said he'd be willing to talk after about the state tournament if you want to.
The state tournament. We always seem to come back to that, Drew.
Of course, there's always work to be done.
Well, I want to start talking about your team, and that was just a great win for you. A great win beating Trumbull number one, which was undefeated to start the week, and beating them without your top player, top scorer, Jay Genova.
Yeah, you know, we've had a rash of injuries right now, without, you know, a couple starters, three starting guards, playing Trumbull was pretty intimidating. We had a good game on Tuesday night on the road at Greenwich, and felt good about ourselves. Prepared really well for the Trumbull game and felt super confident coming into it that we could compete. And I thought it was a good Friday night high school basketball game, and I thought the Tigers were super tough and resilient, and made enough plays to get that the victory that we needed, a much needed victory.
You really took advantage of your size and your height. Trumbull, probably its biggest glaring liability, and it's something they can't do anything about, it is their lack of height. And between Jacob Planka, who's really come on for you the second half of the season, and Foley and Jay Humphrey, you really were able to kick the ball inside and get a lot of easy baskets and be able to use those big arms on defense to block passing lanes.
Sure. I think, you know, when you're a basketball coach, sometimes you have to adapt during the season to your team's strengths. And certainly every game with a scouting report, you figure out what areas of the other team that you want to attack. And hopefully expose a little bit and work on. And so, you know, it wasn't a perfect plan and it didn't go perfectly. But, yeah, there was an emphasis on getting the ball inside. But, frankly, for Ridgefield, like, our plan is to get as many inside paint points, one-footers, we call them, as possible, no matter who's playing. But, yeah, it was part of the game plan for Friday night for sure.
Mike, I'll let you jump in.
No, I just am impressed by the way that you've adapted this team to, you know, their strengths and their weaknesses. Especially, I think the last two games without who I consider one of the top three guards in the league, and Jason Jones. And I think that's a plus in a way that you were able to play well without him, because that's going to only help you as you go into the playoffs. And especially, you know, the confidence of some of these other kids are getting by getting playing time. And again, I've watched you over the years, Coach, and you really do a good job of developing the team for the end of the year, where you want to be playing your best when you hit the playoffs. And, you know, you've done that certainly over the years that you've been at Ridgefield. And, you know, I'm sure that this year is no exception.
Yeah, you know, like sometimes you're forced to play different kids, but it's kind of a program philosophy for us. We spend a lot of time on program development because you never know. And, you know, like even when you don't have injuries, we're coaching 15 to 18-year-old boys, so you never really know who's going to be, you know, focused and able to go. And then, you know, basketball and all these sports, but, you know, basketball is a contact sport. You know, people get hurt. And, yeah, so let me address the first part, like the injuries and playing other people, you know, that next man up mentality. Like, we don't really think about it quite like that, but we want people to be prepared and comfortable in their roles. I think it's really important for kids to know what their roles are, so when they get in the game, they don't have to, you know, replace Jason Genova or Chris Gannall or Finn Montaner. So when we played Friday with Jay and injured Jay and without Finn and Chris Gannall, like, Chris Gannall and Finn Montaner are two of our toughest kids. They're not tall, but we really miss their toughness. And so, and, you know, Wilton's got injuries too. I'm not blaming their defeat of us on injuries, because they were just as injured as us. We just weren't mentally or physically ready to play the way that Wilton came after us in that game. So, you know, we spent a couple more practices. We got a rain day, snow day. I don't even know what we call Tuesday anymore. We got an extra practice, and then we went down to Greenwich and played really well. And that's usually a difficult game for us. And then again, Friday, those guys were a little bit more comfortable in our roles. And we had a sophomore who hasn't played very much for us, Jack Pallet, come in and, you know, end up with like 8 points and six assists. And, you know, that really good bank shot that he's been working on for free. And then, you know, sarcastically. And then the second part of, like, will this make us a better team? Yeah, absolutely it will make us a better team, because, you know, we have some more kids that are in there and comfortable. And then the other thing is, like, people know now that, like, hey, this is acceptable, this is unacceptable, these are the things that we're trying to do. And now we have, when we get all these kids back, now we have 10, 11, 12 kids that we can account for. So two things happen that way. Now we can, you know, people can be mentally and physically fresh when they're in the game. We don't have to play people quite as long. And then the other thing is, like, if they're not playing well, we have another kid that can come in and support or take over for that night, which, I think is important, because you never know what, you know, teenage boys are going to, you know, be ready to play for 5 or 10 or 15 minutes on any given night with a game plan. And, you know, I always term it as, like, we're fighting our attention span in every single one of these games. And so when we're good, our attention span is really good for extended periods of time. So that's kind of what happened on Thursday night, or Friday night. And, you know, Trumbull made a comeback, and I think Sean's like a multi-dimensional player. So, you know, he made all the right plays, and they made a bunch of threes, and we just kind of withstood their comeback and made enough plays to and enough tough plays to get that victory. Super physical game.
Yeah, I want to piggyback on with Sean and what you just said. The first half of the game was, for them, kind of a carryover from Staples, where they only had four field goals from players other than Sean. They were ice cold. And then the second half of the game was the Trumbull team we've seen that got a 15-0 record, that were raining down threes and hitting outside shots and forced you guys, which you did, to make plays. And then there's Sean Wilson. What I know you had Humphrey on him most of the game. What when you're playing a guy like that who can carry a team at any point, are you saying we'll let him get his points and shut everybody else down, or do you feel like you really need to focus on shutting him down?
Yeah, so one correction. We had Foley on him most of the game, Patrick Foley.
I meant Foley. I'm sorry, Foley.
And so, but like, yeah, I think Mike will jump in here. Like, I don't ever tell anybody, like, hey, let him get their points. Like, I'm not wired like that, and I am not okay with that phrase being, you know, said to, you know, again, teenage boys. But what we say about Sean Wilson is, like, he probably is going to get his points, and he's certainly going to take his shots. So our job as a team is to make him work really hard for those shots. And if he makes shots, he's going to make tough shots. And that's the thing about Sean. I think he's an underrated shooter and playmaker. Everybody knows he can get to the basket and, you know, offensive rebound and dunk and all that other stuff. And, you know, when he gets inside, he's a handful. But, like, he makes off-the-dribble threes. He makes catch-and-shoot threes. So, you know, what we're trying to do is just make him work for every one of his points. And that's why they were still in the game, because he's really good. A lot of times we'll do that with other best players, especially when there's, like, a gap in priority from best player to second best player. And often the lesser players can't really do it with that much focus on them. So I think it just shows what a tough player he is to slow down or stop. Like, he still, you know, I thought we did a tremendous job on him, and, you know, he still ended up in the 20s.
Okay, we're going to take a break here. Drew, I know you offered and we'll accept if you're willing to hold on during the break to talk a little bit about the state playoffs.
Yeah, I'll wait. Thanks.
Okay, great. We will be back with Andrew McClellan on the other side. You're listening to Nothing But Net on WICC.
Let's hear what Dave Rudin has to say about this week in high school basketball. You're listening to Nothing But Net on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
Okay, we're back, and Andrew McClellan's kind enough to stay with us and wasn't going to necessarily go here, but everybody listens to Mike and I rant about it, and I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but I know the league I cover, I don't know any coach that favors the current makeup of the state tournament, and I know Andrew's one of them. Andrew, I don't know what to say. It's just you want to have the 16 best teams, and you've got a team with no losses. You've got teams with one or two losses. You know, Staples is basically, and the 2, 3, 4 seeds, they're all going to have byes, basically, in the first round where there's a field of only 16 teams.
Yeah, well, they actually are going to have two byes because the state tournament in the Division One gives you a bye automatically, which is the first thing. You know, I don't think any coaches want to bye at that time of the year. Like, you know, especially in Division One, if you're, and this is my, you know, this is my first idea. I think at this point for the state tournament, and hopefully people are listening and they're thinking about it, but, like, it's kind of like the tanking or the games played in the NBA. I think they really have to open it up to, like, every single idea right now. Like, let's figure out what even if someone thinks it's a crazy idea, let's hear them all and then, you know, figure out what's best for everybody. Like, for if there's going to be 16 teams, I think, you know, like everyone has said this before, then you can't name it before the season starts. It's just, you know, it's never going to work out that way. My first easiest solution for that is just make it 32 teams. That's almost going to assure us that all the appropriate teams get into Division I. The second thing that does is that gives, like, the best teams and the, you know, the even the top 8, 9, 10 teams, that gives them a competitive game as a first game before you have to go play, you know, I don't know, like Notre Dame West Haven is going to be the 4 or 5 seed this year. That's a pretty tough game. Or, you know, like Holy Cross, Ridgefield, like they're in the 7 to 10 range. Like, that's a pretty tough game for a first game. So I think having 32 or 36 teams in that Division I bracket gives us like a coverage of, okay, it's going to get all the teams that are good enough to play in that bracket. I have some other ideas too.
Go ahead. We want to hear them. Throw them out there.
Yeah. Good question. Go ahead, Mike.
How would you select the 32 teams? Hopefully based on this year's performance.
Well, again, I wouldn't pick it on the year before performance, but if it's the easiest thing to do, I think that's going to, you know, I think that's going to lump them all in there. So, you know, if a team is able to win the Division II state championship like Manchester, then, you know, I think they're probably should be good enough to be in the tournament with the top 32 teams in the league for that year or for that next year. So, again, I think if we're going to pick it ahead of time, it's got to be bigger, and it's not going to be perfect. But I think that gets everybody. For instance, I don't think anybody in the FCAC should be any lower than in a Division II tournament. Like, the schools are big enough, and that's where Dave comes in. He says, let's just make it the four, you know, the four regions. I think that's fine, but it sounds like they're, you know, reticent to do that.
Yeah, would you agree to it? I asked you this the other night. If we're not going to find a proper solution, let's just go to LLL, M, and S, and we're going to have a few more letters because they're going to want to have at least one more state champion, and then just decide based on record, and if they don't want to put any thought to it, if you win this many games, you go into LLL, this many L for the schools of choice.
Go ahead, Mike.
No, I think that, you know, whether you have Division I or LLL, whatever you call it, I think the schools of choice that are successful should be in that Division I. And having been in that situation, you know, that you want to play the best. I know that the Notre Dame of West Haven and Notre Dame of Fairfield, Holy Cross this year has requested to be in Division I, and they should be. Gives you, you know, I think a truer state tournament along with the teams, you know, like West Haven and Ridgefield. And, you know, the fault is that a team like Manchester and a team like Danbury, I mean, poor Casey does not have the ammunition that he usually has. They should not be in Division I if you're picking the best 16. Now, maybe 32 is a different story. But the top 16 should be based on what has happened this year at the end of the season. It's not that difficult to figure out.
And I think it should be that way with the top 32. I agree with Drew. I like 32 teams. I don't agree in terms of, like, Manchester from last year. I just think if you're going to have top teams are this year. Top teams aren't last year's record because Manchester lost the whole – Manchester this year shouldn't be penalized because they lost an entire senior class from a team that should have been in Division I last year and not Division II.
But that happens every year. Yeah. I mean, going back to the East Catholic West Hill situation and then – Bristol Central when Clean left. It happens every year. So why not base it on – and I think that's where every coach that I've talked to anyway, is an agreement based on what we're doing this year. Actually, it's on 3 years they base it, I think, now, which is kind of ridiculous.
I think they moved it back to two this year, but it doesn't make a difference.
They did. But again, like, I don't think teams should be rewarded to go down because they're not good. Like, these schools of choice, the reason that the schools of choice that are up there, you know, they're doing their job really, really well. So the other schools of choice need to do their job a little bit better. But the teams that, you know, have a really good year 1 year, like, there's no reason why they can't figure out a way to compete on some level if the school's big enough to stay in the same region. They don't move them down in other sports. So, again, if you're talking about a group of 16, then you probably have to do it that way. But I don't, it's not my favorite thing. And we talked about that. How about this idea? If football has six brackets and, you know, like, we're going to have these small tournaments, it seems like that is a way, if we're going to have 16 team brackets, that seems like that could be a way. And again, this is not like a something that I would die on, but this is an idea. What if there's a school of choice tournament with 16 teams? So I would love to see a public school, the top 16 public schools in a Division I tournament. That sounds like a great tournament with, like, schools that are built the same way together. And maybe there's a school of choice bracket of 16 or 20 teams or what have you, and they can battle with teams that are, again, built the same way. You still probably have to decide that later in the season as well.
That would be the fairest way to do things, but because the state doesn't want to have a private school league, that's why we're coming up with all these other solutions. And football, where you criticize football is that you have too many state divisions and state champions, and we do. But bottom line is football is still having their divisions based on, you know, LLM and the school sizes. So you have commonality. I just think right now, if you're not going to base on what you're doing this year, the fairest thing is just go to LLM, you know, add as many letters as champions as they want to have, and just do it that way, and then decide what you're going to do with the schools of choice.
Drew, let me just go back, way back, actually, to the best tournament that was ever run. I don't know if you're still around, but that was a Division 1, 2, 3, and 4, and it was based on the season you're playing, and you got power points for playing good teams, et cetera, and it was 32 teams, and you ended up with the best 32. We were like the number one seed, and we played a team that only had lost 4 games. And we went, I think, almost overtime to win that game and get into the bracket of 16. I mean, that tournament was unbelievable, really.
Best tournament the state ever had.
That's what I'm talking about. If you get the 32 teams in there, listen, obviously, if you select the teams during the season or towards the end of the season, all right, that is the best way to do it. But if they're not willing to do that, we would get something pretty similar to that ahead of time with if you make it 32 or 36 teams. Like, that is a tournament. Like, Connecticut, in my opinion, like, if you're just going to do it the absolute, like, easiest way, two brackets, big schools, small schools, and we go at it from there. Like, you know, maybe that means you have to play 5 games to win a state championship. But, again, like, You're playing real teams, and, like, I don't know, what's one more game, all right? What's one more game?
It should be 32, and I think Mike and I talked about this. Maybe we go back to that super tournament and try to, you know, just put our faith in coaches that nobody's going to try to throw a game and have a stiff penalty if some sort of a board determines that you do it, where you miss the state tournament you're ineligible for 3 years if you throw a game or try to lose it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even want to talk about someone that would be willing to throw any game for any reason like that. Again, like, you know, I strongly believe if Ridgefield was in Division II, we probably have a state championship, but we don't want to be in Division II. Like, we want to play, we want to win the big tournament. Like, and maybe we never will. Maybe that's naive of me, but like, you want to go swim in the deep end with the big teams. And you know, like that has not given us, you know, the outcome that we're looking for, you know, I like to say yet. But like, you know, one of the things that happens in Illinois is so two things have to happen under Mike Walsh's super tournament. Like, you have to figure out a way to, am I still with you guys?
Yep, we're still here.
All right, so you have to figure out a way to, like, give fair equity for all of your wins. Like, right now, you know, like, if these teams go out of state, it's an automatic 10-point thing. I think there's a better formula. I think Max Preps has a formula. There's got to be a better formula for what your wins count for. I think, you know, again, this takes more work. But I think other states do it in a way where you get the appropriate amount of points for a really good schedule. Right now in Connecticut, there's not really that much incentive for some of these teams to go play really good teams, really, really good teams in their non-league. They're going to play teams that are going to win 8, 10, 12 games, and that gives them enough power points to get where they want. But, you know, and then again, in Illinois, we have a meeting with the teams in our bracket, LLL, whatever, like with 4 or 5 games left in the schedule, you present your case where you think you should be, like, hey, these are our good wins, these are our injuries, these are our bad losses, and then everybody votes, you walk out of that meeting with your bracket, and now you can prepare for your first or second round state games kind of ahead of time. Now that's a little bit next level. But again, like, you know, if we're trying to make the product on the court better, these are areas and ideas that we need to think about. And hopefully, you know, I can't really get anybody's attention to talk about this stuff. So that's why I like to talk about it with, on a podcast with two guys that are interested to talk about it. I'd love to talk about these ideas with some people from the state. And my only incentive is to make our product better on the court.
Nope, Drew, that was a great discussion. Now, I'm glad we discussed a lot of good ideas. It should be done with the CIAC and the coaches and the tournament committee. But we've taken up a lot of your time. I really appreciate your coming on and talking not only about your team but the state tournament. Congratulations on the success you've had, and good luck the rest of the way. I'll see you Friday night in New Canaan, and thanks for taking time here with us.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot for doing all the things you do in the coverage for the boys.
Thanks a lot.
Listen, you do a great job, so hopefully we can do almost as good a job as you're doing. Keep it up, and good luck in the playoffs.
Appreciate that. Thanks a lot. Have a good day, guys.
You too. Thanks. That was Ridgefield coach Bye. Andrew McClellan. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, a little bit of trouble discussion. You're listening to Nothing But Net on WICC.
Everything you need to know about high school basketball. The Rudin Report presents Nothing But Net with Dave Rudin. Now on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Okay, we're back. Mike, that was a great discussion. You and I talk about it. Maybe people don't listen as much because we've been saying the same thing, but it was nice to have a coach talk about it, a coach with a lot of ideas. And all I could hope is if you could get a room full of Drews, and they're out there around the state and get the CIAC, I think we can really improve the state tournament.
There's no question about it. I mean, Drew has his act together as a coach, but also I think as far as what he would like to do as far as the state tournament, a lot of ideas. And he's not the kind of guy that says things just to be saying them. And he has some definite ideas. And like you say, it would be great to sit down and talk to members of the CIC and get coaches involved. I think that's important, too. We talk about the Drew, and there are many other Drews out there, I think, that would like to see a change in the state tournament. And whether Manchester has said anything or not, I'm sure that they would be glad if they were not in Division I. We appreciate his comments. And the thing that we have to realize, that people have to realize, we're not harping on this because, we want to be the bad guys. We want to see the best state tournament in basketball in the state of Connecticut. And like you say, now with the 16 teams based on the past 2 years, you're getting maybe the top 10 teams, and that's stretching it maybe a little bit. And like Drew said, you got a first-round bye, and you're sitting around and playing the second round. And usually when one plays 16, obviously it'll be another bye. So he's basically winning three games to win a state tournament. It's got to change. Hopefully it will. We're doing all we can, which probably nobody cares about, but we do, and that's why we bring it up and talk about it.
I think people care. I think there are a lot of people who just are done banging their heads against the wall and don't think anything's going to change. I'll just say, then let's move on. I'm at the point right now, I'd like to go back to that super tournament and see if we could find a way to do it. And if not, let's just go double LL. And if you want to give 17 state champions or how many we're going to give, I'd like to keep it to four. We do it that way. But let's finish up for a couple minutes. Trumbull started the week looking great at 15-0. Now they're 15-2, and maybe a few question marks have arisen. And my biggest takeaway from this past week is, and we talked about it very early in the season, this is going to be a team that's really dependent on their outside shooting. And if they're not shooting well from outside, they're going to have trouble against a good team. And they shot poorly in 1.5 games this week and lost to Staples by 18 and were down 9 at halftime against Ridgefield, and then had a really good second half shooting the ball and outscored the Tigers by 5 points. I think Trumbull's just got to make their outside shots. They don't have height. They're not getting a lot of offensive rebounds. If they're not shooting well, they're in trouble against the top teams in the league.
Well, they got to use their quickness and also their defensive effort because of the lack of size. But I think that, as I said before, having Sean Wilson as your leader and Buddy as a coach, they're so dangerous that they could they could beat anybody. They went up to not an easy place to play in Ridgefield and gave Ridgefield all they could give. It was a great high school basketball, as Drew said. And I think that their next couple games are really important to gain their confidence back. And as you say, to gain the confidence of the outside shooter. Sean will get you the ball if you're open. You got to knock it down. And I think that they're capable of doing that, and I think that they will do that. Again, that's going to be the key as to whether they're going to be successful. The one thing that we haven't talked about, Dave, is that I think it's very important to finish in the top four, because this year it's going to be a home game for your first game. And I think that's really important, especially for the second, third, fourth seed to play their home game on their home court, which would give them impetus to get into the semifinals. So, again, that's something to look to as we go forward.
Yeah, definitely. And something we'll get to. I think the 2 and 3 seeds even better because you avoid Staples into the championship. And we're going to have a lot to talk about next week because it doesn't get any easier for Trumbull. They go Tuesday, Thursday. They've got New Canaan, and then they've got Fairfield Ludlow. So they've got the other two top teams in the league. So, Mike, we had a lot to talk about today, and we'll have a lot to talk about next week.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, Dave, as usual.
Okay, that was this week's Nothing But Net, brought to you by Dutchess Restaurants, Fresh food, served fast. Again, thanks to Andrew McClellan. Thanks to Paul Goodman in the booth there. Good show, good week of games. Another one coming up. Have a good week, and we'll see you next Sunday.